Welcome to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and at the other end of the line is my mother, Caroline Kilborn. Hi, Mom.
Hi. I hope the sun is shining where everybody is. It is here, thank God.
Well, probably it isn't everywhere, but it is here for now. I was joking around my car, you know, it has, when it shows the temperature, and it has a little icon for snow, and it said it was snowing today. It was wrong. It is not.
Well, let's hope it doesn't. It's not a prophecy of anything.
So, Caroline, who do we have with us today on Writer's Voices?
Well, today we have the author of The Chemistry of Love, Soraya Wilson, and it's a page turner, believe me, because you really want to know what's going to happen. And that's now she is the author of four other books and romance novels, and this is a good one. She grew up in Southern California, graduated from Brigham Young University with a semi useless degree in history, and the oldest. I'm reading this, and the oldest of nine children. She currently lives with her soulmate and husband and their four children in Utah, along with two cats. And as I said before, this is a really interesting book, and so I'm anxious to hear her take on it. I really am. And I'm going to try to read some of these other ones that she wrote, because I think they're all going to be good.
Welcome to Writer's Voices, Soraya.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. Yeah.
So this is your fifth published novel?
This is like my 24th published novel.
24th published novel. Okay.
Oh my God.
How did you get started?
Oh gosh, it's a long story. And I'll try not to be too long, just because I am a storyteller and I tend to do the whole thing. It all kind of started, my oldest son, just before his third birthday, was diagnosed with autism. And there were, you know, this was like 20 years ago, you know, not as much was known, and there were not as many services and things, and there were recommendations for some therapies that were something like $10,000 out of pocket. And for a young married couple, I was pregnant, like that might as well have been $10 million. There was just no way, you know, and there was no GoFundMe or anything like that that you could do. So I was kind of praying about it and meditating on it, and what do I do? How do I get this money? What can I do to help my son? And there's this like very clear answer. It was write a book. And I'm like, well, that's stupid. I'm not going to do that. No, that's not an answer. So I kind of put it out of my head. And then one of the things that happened was a bunch of neighbors got together and donated items so that I could have like a multi-family garage sale. And I sent out press releases hoping to get, you know, this is back in the day when people had newspapers, hoping to get people to come. And a reporter did call me and asked to come over and interview me. And when I opened the door, she stood on the porch and she said, before I come inside, I just have to ask you, are you a writer? And I'm like, that's a really weird question. Why would you ask me that? You know? And she said, because your press release was so well written, I just assumed that you were a writer. And it was like this lightning bolt, heaven's parting moment where it was like, oh, you know, and I'm like, okay, I'll write a book. I'll do what you want, you know? And so I started off writing some historical romances for a very small niche regional publisher that it was just a bad experience. And then I had two more kids where that just took up all my time. And then I kind of wanted to get back into it. And the indie revolution had started, which I think is fantastic. I love that you can publish whatever you want now. You're not trying to fit somebody else's parameters. The problem is, even if you write a good book, it's really hard to get found. That's still a problem. And so I kind of started looking around thinking, what do I need? And I thought, well, Amazon had their own publishing houses. And I thought, who better than Amazon to promote you, right? Like, can you get better than that? You know, big publishers are paying Amazon money to promote their books. So I thought, gosh, if you were with Amazon, that would be like the dream. So that was kind of my dream. But I didn't have an agent and I had no idea how to even get in, you know, how to even submit to them. And they started a program called Kindle Scout, and it was kind of like American Idol, but for books. And it was, you could put up like your cover and your first chapter, and then readers could vote. Like, I think this sounds like a good book, or, you know, and even if you got a lot of votes, it didn't mean anything. That you could get a million votes and have Amazon go, oh no, we're not interested in this. But I finished a book, and the day I finished this contest was announced, and I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to enter that. Like, it just felt like, again, like this sign, you know. And I had an indie group that I was a part of, and they were like, why would anyone do this? Why would anyone let Amazon have, you know, their money? And I'm like, because Amazon will get you so many more readers. Like, it felt very weird that no one else could see the potential. But I did it, and I ended up winning. I was one of the first 10 winners of that contest. And the woman in charge called me and said, why did you enter? I said, I really want to work with Montlake Romance. That's my dream. I would love to do that. And so she said, cool, thanks for letting me know. And the next thing I know, I'm getting a phone call from a woman that I now know is like the editorial director of Montlake. Like, she runs the place. And I didn't know this at the time. So I thought it was just this get your foot in the door, network, you know, meet someone. And at the end of the conversation, she goes, well, we're going to offer you a 2-book contract. And I was like literally in shock. Like, I was just sitting there like, and like years later, she tells me, she's like, you're such a tough nut to crack. You don't react. And I'm like, no. I was in shock. I didn't believe this was happening because this doesn't happen in publishing. Like, this is not anybody else's story. Like, it's just such a weird, weird thing that happened. So yeah, that was 7 years ago. And I started publishing with them. And ever since, I've been, you know, I've got an agent since then and kind of been looking different directions and growing my career. But yeah, been publishing for a while.
Wow. So is Montlake an Amazon imprint?
Yes, it is. It's their romance line.
Okay. And is that contest still happening?
Nope. It ended years ago. And it was funny because of the people that entered, only two of us got contracts with an Amazon imprint. Nobody else did. They had a special imprint set up just for that contest, and they would do promotions and things there. And it was a good thing to be a part of. A lot of my writer friends who had mocked me ended up entering it because I did so well. And they're like, oh, maybe they're it. I'm like, yeah, you think, you know, like, this is a great thing. Like, letting Amazon promote you is pretty awesome. So yeah, that has since gone away. I don't remember what year it closed, but Amazon's really big on trying things out and seeing what they think.
Yeah.
Like, I actually have a book. It's called, oh my gosh, my mind just went blank. I think it's Royal Design. And they approached me, and my editor at the time said, I have a project that Amazon wants to do. I can't tell you any details. Are you in? And I'm like, yeah, I'm in. Like, I don't tell Amazon no, you know, like, whatever you want to try, I'm game. And it took a long time before I got any details. But what it is, if you look it up, it's a book that has a bunch of gifts in it. So as you're turning a page, I see the heroine works at a diner, and you see a picture of an actress in dressed up as the, you know, the heroine, and she's cleaning a table. And so it's just sort of like you have these little looping gifts in the story because Jeff Bezos thought that was the future of books.
Oh, in the digital version of the book.
Right, like a little movie going on in your digital version. And so when you look at the cover, like on Amazon, it moves like Harry Potter. Like, the cover moves as you're looking at it. It's very cool. So it was a really neat experience. And this was supposed to be the future. And I thought, I can't even imagine how much money they spent on it. There's like 5 actors in the story, and they had sets and wardrobe and makeup and hair. And I don't know if it made that money back.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it was an experiment that they tried, and they did it with a lot of different books, and they don't do it anymore.
Okay. So I guess people didn't go for it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think most readers like to just read. They don't like having.
Well, honestly, I think most readers actually prefer reading a physical book.
Yeah.
To digital.
I mean, it depends.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I do both, but if I have it both on digital and hard copy, I'll sit down with the hard copy if I'm at home. Now, if I'm traveling, of course, that's where the Kindle or e-readers really shine, because you can have so many different books with you. Except if you forget to download them before you get on the plane, you're kind of stuck.
That's the problem. Yeah. Gotta make sure you do that.
That happened to me the last trip. So you said you started writing historical romance, which seems like that makes sense because you had a degree in history. But the chemistry of love, of course, is a contemporary romance. What made you decide to move into that?
Well, when I looked at doing indie books, I did a couple of indie books, and they were YA and they were contemporary. And it was because literally this heroine showed up in my head and would not stop talking. And like, she was so funny. And I loved her. And I'm like, this is hilarious. Like, I have to write this down. Like, I would get up and just write down whatever, you know, I was hearing. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it's very different than what I normally do. But you know, let's see what happens. And I had a lot of writer friends who read it, and I had one of them come back to me, and she's like, Soraya, this is your voice. Like, I like your other books. She's like, but this is something special. This is where you need to put your focus. And so it was kind of like having that encouragement, you know, and having someone say, this is what people are going to respond to. And she was right. You know, this is my sweet spot. This is what I should be doing. This is my voice. So that's kind of why I switched.
Yeah. So how many books have you written in this voice, basically?
I think like 20 of them would be this kind of first person,
oh, wow.
You know, chick-lit fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So. Well, I was just wondering how you came up with this job that she had. I mean, the chemistry, you know, it just, that was amazing because it just fit in so perfectly with the whole thing, the chemistry of love. So how did you decide to use that?
It was funny. I knew that I was going to have a fake dating relationship, and it was going to be between brothers, and she would be fake dating one to make the other jealous. So that was the first thought I had for this book. The second was, while I was thinking about it, was I thought of this lipstick that would change colors, and I don't know where it came from, but I thought it would be such a cool way to show the audience and the hero how her feelings are changing without her saying it. And I knew nothing about cosmetic chemistry at all. I knew there were people that made makeup, but I didn't know anything about the field. And I went out and did research, and you can do research, you know, but there's only so much that going online can tell you, that even if I can learn what a cosmetic chemist does, it doesn't tell me the day-to-day what it's like to be in a lab and to be actually making makeup. So I kind of went looking, I think what I did was I looked at my college, thinking maybe if they had a department like this, I could get in touch with someone. And it brought me to this girl who had gone to my school and was a cosmetic chemist. And so I reached out on Instagram, I DM'd her. I'm like, this is really weird, but I'm a writer. I want to write a character that's a cosmetic chemist. Would you mind talking to me about your job? And she responded, yes. So, you know, thank heaven for that. But like, she had just had a baby, so she was kind of home from work. So it was just like this perfect timing where she had the time to be able to talk to me. And we sat down that first day on Zoom and probably talked for an hour and a half straight. And she just was such a wealth of information. And so many things that my heroine does in this book, I've actually gotten some kind of negative reviews about. No chemist would ever do this. They're all directly taken from her life. They are literal things that she did that I thought were so hilarious. I'm like, can I put that in the book? She's like, yep. I'm like, can I put that in the book? So, but you know, her drinking out of the beaker, that was, she did that in real life. The self-tanner mix-up, that was a real life thing. So there were several different, you know, they're having the lab at home. When I spoke to her, she has a home lab. She has a bedroom set up. That's her lab. And she says, I make like La Mer for like cents in the dollar, you know, this very expensive moisturizer. It costs, if you know, it's very easy to figure out what's in it, and I make it all the time. So yeah, I thought people were like, nobody has a lab in their house. I'm like, well, she does. So,
yeah,
you know, it's very much from her life and what it's like to be in a lab and be in a predominantly kind of male field where, and it's funny because they're making makeup, which, you know, let's say is mostly worn by women, you know, and it's not a women heavy industry, which I find very interesting. So yeah, it was just learning from her, and she was so amazing about answering emails. If I had any kind of question, I'd say, what about this? And what about that? And I asked her about the lipstick, cause it's just not possible to do this lipstick, right? Like, it's completely fictional. And I had to do a lot of research on my own and found these studies and things that she cites in the book as ways that she might work around it. That was me, because my chemist said there's just no way. And then while I was writing it, they came out with a lipstick that changes color based on temperature. It didn't exist when I started writing it.
Oh my.
By the time I got to my edits, it existed. And so I was like, ugh. So I had to go back through and make it, you know, and change the dialogue of her saying, nothing like this exists. And, you know, I'm like, I thought of it first, you know.
I feel like I had a lipstick a long time ago that changed colors, but I don't remember what.
They have a new one that came out. There's ones that, like, there were ones that were like, you put it on clear, like the tube is clear, and when you put it on, it's like pink. But it stays that color, or like you put it on like a red and you peel it off and it's a different color underneath.
Okay.
This one actually, this new one actually changes color depending on your body temperature and the kind of the weather outside. But that literally was announced while I was writing this book. Oh my goodness. I had to make changes. So, yeah.
Now, her jokes. Did you write those jokes, or are there you know, actual chemist lists of chemistry jokes you can look up?
Some of them I looked up. I knew I wanted to have like a bunch of puns because the grandpa character is based on my dad. My dad is very similar to this grandpa with his birds, only he has turtles instead of birds.
But with names like Geese Witherspoon.
They don't have funny names. I don't even know where that name came from. I just thought of it and I'm like, oh, this could be a bit. This could be funny, and included it. And it just kind of happens while I'm writing. Like, it's not planned. It just sort of like things just occur to me, and that occurred to me. I'm like, oh, that could be really cute. And so I did. But yeah, my dad loves dad jokes and dad puns. Like, it's his favorite. And so I thought, well, I've got to put that in there and make it part of the banter. And so I did. So some of it was stuff I came up with. Some of it I actually like looked up. I'm like, what are some chemistry jokes that I can include? You know, because science is not my thing. I am not a science girl.
Do you want a bad pun joke for your dad?
Sure. Okay. I love it.
So I do puns for our team meetings at work here. So today's was, where do rainbows go when they're bad?
Where is that?
Prism. It's a light sentence.
He will enjoy that. It's a light sentence. My dad will like that. He will enjoy that. That's a good one.
I got it off of Twitter. So was it hard to like make sure that when you know, because if you don't have a science background, even though you're getting the information from a scientist, you know, it's not, you're not writing it word for word what she said. Was it difficult to make sure you actually were getting the science right?
It was really hard, and I tried my best, but I thought what I have to balance this with is most readers reading this book are not going to know or care. Like, let's be honest, right? Like,
right, yeah.
Nobody cares about your science. So I thought there's this kind of this line to walk where it's accurate, and you know it's important to the characters, that it matters to them. But by the same token, making it readable and understandable for a general audience and not having it be so overwhelming that a reader is turned off by it. Like, I am so bored with your science talk and that's enough. So, I think that you have to be aware of that kind of thing and keep it in mind. And I tried very hard to. So hopefully I walked that line well. But yeah, that was very much in my mind.
You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Soraya Wilson, author of The Chemistry of Love, which is going on sale the week after we're recording this, but probably before you're listening to it. Is it still, after all these books, exciting when the new one comes out? Do you still get a rush? Well, or?
This one was a little different because Amazon has a program called First Reads, and I don't know if you're aware of it, but if you have a Prime account, if you're a subscriber to Prime,
yes,
every month you can get a free book. And so being included in that is like a really big deal. It's a really big honor. And The Chemistry of Love was in that in January. So for the month of January, you could get it for free if you had a Prime account. So I have been advertising and telling people and doing all the social media blitz that you would do with the release. Like, I've been doing it for the last month. So it came out yesterday, like officially came out. Like, everybody can buy it now.
Okay.
And I was like, oh yeah, it's my pub day. Like, it wasn't until like 2 o'clock that I was like, I should be putting out some social media stuff. I should be, you know.
Well, I will tell you, your advanced reader's copy said the pub date was February 7th, but.
It got changed. Yeah. It changed. Back to the first, and then, yeah.
Because you got to have it in time for Valentine's Day.
That's right. Yeah. It's such a great love story. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So you talked about that you're starting with a fake dating trope kind of as where you started from with this. Is that an extremely common trope in romance writing, or somewhat common, or?
I think it is.
Yeah.
And it's one of those ones that I think, gosh, this must not happen a lot in real life. Like, I can't imagine it happens. But then you hear stories online. Like, people put out these articles, like, we pretended to date for this reason, and then they actually fall in love. So it must happen. It must happen in real life too. But I think it's an easy one. And I think writers use it because it creates this push-pull that the audience enjoys, where you can see they're falling in love, but they're denying it and they're pushing it away because this is just pretend. This isn't what they really want. And it's an easy deniability for the characters to say, oh, no, this isn't, no, we don't want this. And part of the problem when you're writing a romance, and this probably sounds really weird, but especially if you're writing people who don't like each other, is you have to find a way for them to spend time together. And because they have to have that time to fall in love. And so fake dating is like perfect for that because they have to fake date. They have to spend time together. It makes it a lot easier to get the romance started, I think. So yeah, I think it's a pretty common trope. I think it shows up a lot.
Yeah. How, of course, you made it unique because of the whole chemistry and also the nerd backgrounds. So is that, is that something that you're really into?
It is something I'm really into. Like, I will tell, I will tell you, of all my heroines, this one is probably the most like me. She thinks the most like me. She enjoys the same things I enjoy. I hadn't really written a huge fangirl before, and I am one. So I had a blast doing that. And it's funny, this being this kind of nerd fangirl thing has led to some really amazing experiences in my life. Like I got to meet Adam Driver, who plays Kylo Ren.
Oh my gosh.
In the new Star Wars. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
it's been a lot of fun.
How did that happen?
Oh, I like to do these charity auctions. And it's like someone has a charity thing and then they're like, in the prizes, you get to meet this actor or you get to go on this set. And so as I've gotten older and had a little bit more disposable income, this is my hobby. I mean, other women buy shoes and handbags. This is what I do. And I'm just such a pop culture junkie. Like, I love it. I mean, I watch so much TV and movies. And people are like, do you watch this TV show? And I'm like, you're funny. Yes, I watch that TV show. I watch every TV show. But I'm a huge Star Wars fan. Like, grew up with it. Like, one of my first memories of movies is going to see Return of the Jedi in theaters when I was, like, 8 years old. And, you know, when my family first got a VCR, first thing my dad bought was Star Wars movies, you know, and we watched them constantly. I mean, he made up the song lyrics to the Star Wars theme that I still sing in my head whenever I watch the movie. So it's, I went to his house the other day and he had Star Wars on TBS. And I'm like, Dad, why are you watching this on TBS? You own this like in 5 different formats. And he goes, because I love it so much. So it's just, aww. It's very much in my DNA. Like, it's just how I grew up. Like, when the prequels came out, Phantom Menace, I had just given birth like 4 days before Phantom Menace came out. And I, C-section, I had an infection I didn't know about because I just thought it was supposed to hurt that much. I went to go see Phantom Menace, you know, in Whoa. That state because that's how much I love Star Wars.
Oh, wow.
So I was really excited about the sequels. I was just so into them. And then the middle one where they really let Kylo Ren and Rey fall in love. And like, you could just see the chemistry in the story. And I'm like, I am eating this up. This is amazing. I was so afraid they were going to make them related because, you know, that's something Star Wars has done before.
Yes, yes.
So I was worried. And then the third movie, I mean, it was really stupid that she was a Palpatine, but they weren't related. And I was so excited. And I'm watching the end and he's rushing to save her. And I'm like, this is just my jam. I am like, put this in my veins. I love everything about this. They kiss. They have true love's kiss. And then he dies. And I was sitting there going, are you kidding me? Like, I remember looking around when the movie ended saying, that can't be it. This can't be the ending. What are you doing? This is Han Solo and Princess Leia's son. What have you done? You know, I was really upset. And I like fixated on it. Like, it's all I wanted to talk about. My husband actually said to me, could you stop talking about Star Wars and like Ben Solo? Like, I would really appreciate that. It was bad. So I thought, I wonder if there was an alternate ending. Cause you know, sometimes directors or filmmakers will make it like an alternate ending. Maybe there's one where he lived. And I'm like, I said, I need to ask Adam Driver. And I don't know why I said this, but apparently I manifested it because the next day I'm on my little charity celebrity auction site that I use. And there was an auction to meet him at the SAG Awards. It was back in 2020. And I was like, well, I'm going to win that. You know, I'm going to ask Adam Driver, right? So I won, and I took my 12-year-old daughter with me to it, and we had a blast. We were on the red carpet. There were some bleachers where they have the fans stand and sit. And it was just, I mean, I had childhood heroes coming through. Like Henry Winkler, the Fonz, came over and told my daughter that she was beautiful and signed autographs for us. You know, like... Helena Bonham Carter came over and she's like, how do you spell your name? And I was just like, ah, I'm I'm so excited to meet you. Like, and Carrie, I'm sitting, I look up and Carrie Elwes is just standing in front of me and I'm like, Princess Bride, you know? So it was a blast. Like Christian Bale came over and did one for my daughter. All the kids from Stranger Things signed autographs for her. Like, she was so excited. So it was really a lot of fun. And I'm talking to everyone and I'm like, hey, good to see you. Good luck tonight. You know, you look gorgeous. And I was fine. And so I'm waiting for the time that I get to meet Adam Driver. I mean, that's why I'm there. And when he walks on the red carpet, it was very easy to see because he's literally like a head taller than everybody else there. And he starts walking towards me and my brain turned off. And I didn't know this at the time. I know it now, but apparently he hates red carpets. He hates making small talk. Like, it's like the bane of his existence. And so he's walking towards me and my brain turns off. And I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was like, this is the first Star Wars person I'd ever met in real life. And I, whatever it was, my brain turns off. And he walks over and he introduces himself and he shakes our hands and he says, you know, how are you? And I'm like, I think it's a good, you know, and he says, where are you from? And I literally, my mind, I said, why does Adam Driver care where I'm from? That was my thought. And I'm like, obviously he was trying to make small talk.
Right.
And I'm
right.
sitting there going, why do you care? You know, and he goes, where are you from? I'm like, oh, Utah. You know, I know the answer to this. So it was entirely embarrassing. I made a fool of myself. We got some autographs and took some pictures. And if you actually want to go to my Instagram, I'm at Soraya Wilson 411. I have videos. I have like saved videos. Uh-huh. There's a professional video of him meeting us. And then there's the one that my daughter filmed. Like, she stood there and filmed the whole, because she's 12, you know,
right,
they film
right,
everything.
Right.
So she filmed the whole interaction. It was very embarrassing. And as he walked away and I kind of came back to myself, I was like, oh my gosh, this is a book, right? Like, this is a book. Girl meets her favorite celebrity, can't speak, you know. I went home and called my agent, even though she's like 3 hours ahead of me in New York. I'm like, I have a book I need to write. You know, we called my editor like the next day. She's like, oh, I love this. We're going to do this. And that actually is a book. It's The Seat Filler. Came out last year. So yeah, I'm a fangirl. This is the nerdiest part of me. And I try to hold it back with other people because usually other people are not so much like I am about it. But yeah, I think in Chemistry of Love, I kind of went full hog for it. I just.
Absolutely. Really, I saw Adam Driver in Burn This on Broadway. It was.
I'm so jealous. Amazing. I heard he was so good.
Oh yeah. And Carrie Russell. They are just, yeah, it was really. Excellent.
I would have loved to have seen that.
That
was amazing.
Was back when I used to go to New York and go see a couple shows every summer before COVID. So I'm hoping maybe this summer I can start doing that again. But, yeah. You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Soraya Wilson, author of The Chemistry of Love. Soraya, why don't you read a little bit from the book for us?
Okay. I tried to pick a scene. And so since we're talking so much about nerdery stuff, I'm glad that I picked this scene.
All right.
So to set this up for you, my hero and heroine are going to go to a Dungeons and Dragons playing party. It's their debuting, you know, as a couple. And to kind of make people think they're falling in love, they need the gossip to spread so that his brother, who works at the same company, finds out that they were there together. So she meets him at the party and he pulls up. And so it says, there was a jolt when I leaned down to see him properly. Absence had made my heart forget that the guy I was pretending to date was super attractive, and it was annoying that my body kept leaping with excitement every single time I was around him. I probably shouldn't invite you to join me. I have a policy of not getting in a car with strange women. He just thought it was so hilarious, didn't he? I'm willing to bet you've had a lot of strange women in this car. Marco laughed as he reached across to the passenger side and opened the door. Here, get in. See what you're missing out on. Again, he was hard to resist. I slid into the passenger seat and closed the door behind me. The interior was warm and inviting. It smelled like him, that delicious, expensive, probably custom-made cologne that would be a scent memory for the rest of my life. If I ever smelled this particular combination of light citrus and amber musk and something I couldn't quite put my finger on, I'd always think of him in this moment. What do you think, he asked. It took me a second to realize he meant the car and not how good he smelled. It's very nice, I said begrudgingly, all shiny with a dashboard that looked like the gauges actually worked, seats made out of leather that were still intact. I think it's interesting that somehow I intuited you drove a Porsche. Psychic? Or you're just really playing to type here, I said. He smiled again. I took that opportunity to steal a glance at him. Yep, just as handsome as I'd remembered, especially with that 5 o'clock shadow on his jaw, just a bit of roughness and the overall image of a cool, polished, collected man. He made me feel severely underdressed, even though we were literally wearing the same thing, jeans and a t-shirt. It was refreshing to know that he did own something besides suits. But even in his casual wear, he looked like a model who'd be paid a fortune just to stand around and look pretty, and I was wearing wrinkled clothes from my bedroom floor. As if he sensed my thoughts, he said, "You look nice. Wow, you're a good liar." Even though he'd said it in a way that made me believe him. "And you look just terrible." He laughed again, and I found that I really enjoyed the sound. How is this the guy people were scared of at Minx? "Ben Solo deserved better," he said, looking at my shirt. "What's that supposed to mean?" "Well, first, have you seen Star Wars? Because that's going to change how I explain it." "Of course, hasn't everyone?" "There are so many reasons Ben Solo should have lived." "Wait," he interrupted. "He was the villain. The only way he could have paid for his sins was by dying." "Says you and every man on the internet," I said. It was an argument I'd heard ad nauseum, and it was wrong. Not that I could make myself heard in the midst of online fandom fights, given that the Star Wars fandom were not kind to female fans. No, he didn't need to die. If you read the canon comics, you would know that he was abused and tortured his entire life by Snoke and Palpatine. The kid never even had a chance. And even then, he still felt continually pulled to the light. All the main characters from the original trilogy, Han, Luke, Leia, his loved ones, wanted him back. They wanted him to live. And they all sacrificed themselves so that he could survive. Not to mention that he was part of a dyad, that Rey was his literal soulmate, and as the heroine, the girl who wanted a family more than anything, she should have been given her Disney prince. The first one to die after True Love's kiss, by the way. People don't have to die to atone for their sins. He was the last Skywalker. He came back to the light. He should have lived. Marco was grinning at me like he was enjoying my rant. "I'm guessing you didn't care for the last movie." I did a lot of hand-waving and loud groaning. I felt personally attacked. When it ended, I actually looked behind me to see if there was an issue with the camera, because surely the movie couldn't have ended with him being dead. I let out a big sigh. "Anyway, thank you for coming to my TED Talk." "It was very good. And all the things you brought up, I guess I had never thought of it that way. You won me over. He did deserve better. You're very passionate about this. That's good. Craig will like that." Saying Craig's name was like Marco had just poured a bucket of ice-cold water over my head. Why was it such a shock? Had I really been, just been caught up in what I was saying and being reminded, which we were here for, caught me off guard? That made a certain kind of sense. It wasn't the reason, though. Once again, I'd forgotten about Craig and been enjoying my time with Marco. I looked out of the car window at Catalina's house. Now we were about to go into this party and had to convince a room full of questioning, observant scientists that we were a real couple. It suddenly seemed impossible and overwhelming. "Is there anything else I should know about you before we go inside? Any big surprises? Did I have any secrets left? I felt like he knew almost everything about me. I think we've cleared out all the skeletons in my closet." "In your case, it's half-elves in your closet. Are you sure I'm not going to find a Ben Solo life-size cutout in there, too?" "No, that's a more recent obsession, and obviously I'm a grown woman, so I can't go out and buy that." "I could buy it for you." "That's interesting. I mean, no, I don't need that. I'm an adult." "Enjoy the things you enjoy, Anna. Don't let other people make you feel bad about it." That made a strange lump appear in my throat, and I shifted my gaze away from his. I glanced down and saw a tiny piece of glitter next to a stick shift. I pointed it out, and he nodded. He said, "I'm still finding glitter in weird places," saying, "Plus, I'm pretty sure they've started a colony in my car." I reached out to touch it and stuck to my finger, which was a little jittery at the moment. "Are you nervous?" he asked. "Yes." He leaned towards me like he was going to do something, but he didn't. "Don't worry, I'm here. You have my sword. A line from Lord of the Rings. And your axe?" Marco gave me a funny look, and I realized he'd misheard me. "Axe," I repeated, emphasizing the X sound. I said, "Axe. Although your, you know, is nice, too. Not that I've been looking. How did I keep making this worse? It's just, I have eyes, and you, I'm going to shut up now." He gave me that smile, the kind men like him had, where they knew exactly the effect they had on women. I wanted to hate this about him, but found that I couldn't. It was almost endearing, which made no sense, because it was basically arrogance, and I've always hated arrogance. "It'll be okay," he said. "I don't know. At the moment, it feels a little like somewhere out there a hobbit is carrying a ring to a volcano."
And that was Soraya Wilson reading from The Chemistry of Love. One of the things I really enjoyed about the book is how funny it is. I mean, really funny. And it's hard to write a funny book.
It is easily the hardest part of what I do, without question. Yeah. And I've kind of put myself in a corner because there's an expectation that it'll be funny, and not just that it'll be funny, but that people will like laugh out loud. And on top of that, for me, I think what's really hard is I am worried about recycling jokes. You know, like, have I said this already? Have I done this already? And nobody tells you that in your writing career. Like, I really thought that once I got published that this would all be easier. That's a lie. Nobody tells you that part. It's harder. And it's harder because of things like this, where am I telling the same jokes? And it would be fine, except for the fact that you get, well, I have readers who reread my stuff all the time. They're like, I'm reading Star Trek for the fourth time, you know, and they'll say, oh, that joke you made in Chemistry of Love, you put that in Star Trek, you know, and it's like, sorry, I, you know, I'm not trying to, but it's my sense of humor. So it's going to repeat, Or then you get people who find you, like they read Chemistry of Love and they love it. So then they go back and they read every book I've ever written. And you run into the same problem, like, oh, you did this joke a few times, and, you know, they bring it up to you, and I feel really bad. So I'm very sorry for repeating jokes, but...
Well, do you write all the jokes yourself? Because that's a whole talent in and of itself.
I mean, I know some of it's probably based on stuff I've heard. I mean, like my brothers say stuff, and I write down what my brothers say because they're so funny. But, you know, I'm sure some of the stuff, like one of the things my brother said, someone's like, oh, she's found this online. And I looked it up. I'm like, yeah, it's like a meme. And I had no idea. But this is just how I think with everything being so present now, like online stuff and people making jokes and social media, I almost feel like stuff just gets in your brain, you know, and you end up sometimes kind of regurgitating things you don't even know that you're doing it.
Well, sometimes I think that you can be being completely original, but somebody else is having the exact same thought somewhere else in the world. It's almost like sometimes I think that ideas are like floating out there and you just sort of grab them, but somebody else might be grabbing it at the same time. And because I've had like ideas for products, and I'm kind of an inventor, and you know, that I think, oh, you know, this, nobody else would ever think of this. And then I go see somebody else has already thought of it. Yeah. Happens a lot.
Stephen King wrote a book about writing, and he said that exact thing. He said, there's like this well of ideas out there, and it's essentially who gets to it first. And that's why you see things like the year that there was two big blockbuster movies that were both about asteroids crashing into the Earth. You know, you're like, didn't we just have an asteroid movie? I will tell you, it happened to me. It was many years ago, but I had this idea. I'm like, what if Santa can't be Santa without having a wife? What if there has to be a Mrs. Claus? And so my romance is, he has to find a wife. And I was so excited about this idea, and I kept thinking about it. And I'm not kidding you, literally that year, the Mrs. Claus came out, which was a huge movie, you know, that Tim Allen's Santa Claus series he's got. It was about him having to find a wife because they couldn't be Santa without her. And then Hallmark put out like two movies that year with the exact same premise. And I was like, everybody's going to think I ripped them off now, but I thought of it first. But obviously I didn't, you know, it was out there and other people kind of jumped on that idea. So
I think you've got something too. I had to dog ear, a page in your book so that I could remember where this was. There was just so many little lines that were just laugh out loud funny to me. And this was one of my favorite one where she's talking about how even though she makes makeup, she doesn't really know how to use it. She goes, like, being a cosmetic chemist and a woman meant I knew automatically how to make myself look good. That's why they were called makeup artists and not makeup spacklers. I just love that. For those who don't know, spackling is something that drywall, construction people do to drywall.
And that came from talking to the cosmetic chemist, that she said that to me, that people call her for makeup tips. And she's like, I don't know. I just make it. And so from there, taking that idea, I'm like, how can I make that funny? You know, play on the artist bit, and then, oh, I'll call them spacklers, kind of, you know. So yeah, it's taking that stuff and putting it in there and going back and saying, how can I make this funny? And, you know, and I get some reviews sometimes, people are like, she tries so hard to be funny. I'm like, well, yeah, I have to try hard.
Yeah.
Readers expect it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Like I said, there are very few books that it's just comedians. The delivery is part of what makes them funny. So when you don't have that and all you have is the written word, it's just so much harder.
It is. And there's stuff that I hear in my head. And there was in The Paid Bridesmaid, there is a line where the wedding planner is frustrated and he says something. And I heard it in my way, like, hilarious. Like, in my head, I'm like, but this may not translate. People may not get why this is funny, because it would be how he delivers this line. Yeah. And when my editor read it, she wrote me and she goes, I loved this line the best. I, you know, heard it this way. I want to put it on t-shirts. And I'm like, I'm so glad that she got it. And I don't know that every reader did, you know, that they heard it the way that in my head.
So what was the line? What was the line?
The line, it's the wedding is falling apart. It's this very carefully, very coordinated wedding. And so the bridesmaid is the heroine, and she's trying to help make the wedding go well. But I mean, like, it starts raining. It's a Hawaiian outdoor wedding, and, you know, all these things just keep going wrong. And so the wedding planner is freaking out, you know, of course, and he's very uptight about what's happening, and he's trying to keep his cool, and it's not going so well. And he's like, and I have to go over and deal with the peacocks in the van. And my hero goes, why do you have peacocks in the van? He's like, the peacocks are for ambiance, Rachel. You know, and that's the line. And so it's just, I hear it in my head, and it's yes. funny, but I don't know that you hear that when you read that line.
Right,
you're hearing
right.
you know, his frustration and his yeah. anger. But that is one of the hard things. It's one of the reasons I think I've always wanted, it's always my dream to have like a movie or a TV show out of my books, because I thought an actor can convey something without even speaking that I can't write. You know, I can't make sure that my audience is seeing it the way that I want them to, but an actor absolutely can. I'm very envious of that medium because of that reason, that they can convey
so
things so easily.
Actually, that was my next question. Have there been any movies or shows made, or is that something that may be happening soon? I mean, it seems like there really should be.
I agree with you. I feel like there really should be, right? Like, everybody's like, oh, there's so many platforms now, and it's so easy to get these movies made. I will tell you, I feel like there's still very much a bias in Hollywood against romantic comedies and against romance in general. I mean, I think we look at the movies that have been coming out, and can you even think of ones that are, you know, that were romance-based or based off a book?
Well,
and
there's also all the Christmas ones.
There's a Christmas ones, you know, very much so the Christmas ones.
Yeah.
But you know, those are kind of Hallmark and
lifetime.
And, I've been approached by Hallmark production a couple of times. Like I had one called Roommate that they were very excited about, and they're like, oh, we can't make this into a movie because they live together, because they are roommates. And I'm like, I can name 11 Hallmark movies off the top of my head where they live together in the movie. Cause like, oh, he booked a rental and so did she, and they have to live together in the rental, you know, like, I'm like, okay, whatever. But, just very strict rules. And it's just, there's so much out there. It's just hard to, I think, kind of get people interested. But you look at things like Bridgerton that is doing so well on Netflix. I'm like, there is a hungry audience for this. People are dying for this romance that you're not giving us, that you think, I don't know what it is. It's just got to be mostly male executives making movies for men, right? Like, that's what it feels like to me. But I hope that there's more of it in the future. And we've been approached. Have people have interest? I have meetings. I've gone to California a few times. It's just, as my agent's fond of saying, all it takes is a stiff breeze to kill a Hollywood deal. You know, it just takes so little for things to fall apart. And I even had a friend, Emily Bleeker, who wrote a series called Wrecked, and or a book, and it was optioned and developed. It was going to be a TV show for CBS. And I mean, they got all the way to the end. Like, everybody's hired, it's a go, the studio's on board, the production company's on board, all the actors, all the crew. And the day they start filming, the pandemic hit when everything closed down. And it's dead.
Oh my God.
It's been, 3 years, and it's never gone anywhere else. So, I mean, I can't imagine getting that close to the finish line having it taken from you. Like, how hard that is. But that happens all the time. Like, it's so common. It's so normal in Hollywood. And it amazes me, because you see some of the absolute junk that is put out, and it's like, how does this get made?
Yeah, I know.
And there's so many great properties out there that, you know.
Well,
have
you ever thought about doing an indie movie?
I have thought about writing a script, and I think I'm going to try and do that this year. I would like to challenge myself and just see if I can. Like, I thought maybe I probably will even do it with The Chemistry of Love, because I feel like that makeup aspect will be very cinematic. It'll be very fun to see visually.
And the birds,
For the
too.
Audience. Yeah. I think there'd be a lot of cute things in there that I think could work really, really well. But I want to try and just see. And I've got some good Hollywood contacts who've said that they would love to look over a script that I've written. And so, who knows? I keep poking away at it, because it is important to me. My agent knows, and she's like, she's always going to bat for me, because she knows it's important to me. I think every writer wants that.
Of course.
To be honest.
Yeah.
But I think it's super important to me, just because I love TV and movies so much. Like, when they made that book I told you about, when they filmed it with the actors and stuff, the director said, how involved do you want to be? I said, as much as you will let me be involved. Mm. Like, whatever you allow me to do, I want to be a part of it. And so she sent me all the casting stuff. Like, I got to see everybody's auditions, and they took my feedback, and they sent me all the wardrobe stuff. And they sent me the first day on set, they had the actors line up, and they sent a message to me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, this is amazing. I'm so touched by this, you know, and it just meant so much to me. And I love this. To me, this this industry is magic. And I got to talk to Rachel Bloom, and she's the star of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and she's done some other things since then. But I had the chance to talk to her, and she said, this is just a regular job. It's just 9 to 5 like everybody else. I don't get why people make such a big deal about it. And I remember feeling stunned. I'm like, you get to make magic. You get to put, you know, this show that touches people and brings people together and causes these emotions. Like, it just, I don't know. That was kind of just shocking to me, because I thought, I don't feel that way about it at all. I think it's incredible. So,
well, the thing about writing a book, it's a very solitary activity, which the plus side of that is that you don't need anybody else to finish your book. It's up to you. You can get it done and get it out there in the world. Now you do need other people to help you get it out there in the world, or at least, well, you don't actually, you can do it all yourself, but if you want people to read it, you know, there, you need other people involved on the team. But to make a movie requires so many people. It's like this group endeavor, and everybody's working towards the same goal. And for that goal to be your idea is really pretty cool.
So you get it.
Yeah, I get it. So yeah, it's sort of the same with business, because I've, you know, founded several businesses, and you know, the one that I'm mostly involved with now, we have, you know, hundreds of employees worldwide. So it's very cool to me to realize that this seed of an idea that I started with 25 years ago with a partner has grown into something that so many people, it's a big part of their lives, and they're all working towards the same goal. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, talking about the Hollywood and so forth, when I turn on my phone and first of all, it shows all these movies that are possible, you know, I'm thinking, I would not want to watch that. Why would I want to watch that? I mean, there's so much on the TV, it seems like there's nothing but FBI this and police that and so forth. And, you know, I don't know. And then you hear all this fun stuff about defund the police and stuff. It's just getting so out of hand for some reason. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, why
I think that is?
Yeah, so much on the...
Yeah. Because Hollywood figures out what works and what people will watch, and then they make a million of them. A little bit different, but still the same. And I will say romance is the same way, right? We're writing romances that are a little bit different, but still the same with our heart. I'm not sure why executives make the decisions they make. I'm very much opposed to there not being... I was talking yesterday with a book club, and they were telling me that they really like my slow burn in Chemistry of Love, that they like how long it took. So that, you know, that you're going, oh my gosh, kiss already. I'm like, that's how I'm trying to make you feel. Because I thought, you go back to like old TV shows and stuff, like Moonlighting, you know, that the romance in that was just top notch for me. Like, it took years for them to kiss. And then it took years after that for them to, you know, go to bed together for the first time. And now I remember saying, I was watching a show where they finally kissed for the first time, this long burn relationship. They kissed for the first time, and the next episode they're living together. And I was like, wait, where's the rest of the buildup? It very much is people kiss for the first time and then have sex for the first time 2 minutes later, you know? And I'm like, I like the old stuff where it's really this long drawn out, you know, you anticipation, build it up, make people invested, make them like dying for it. Like daytime soaps were notorious for that. Like, they were so good at that, that, you know, you tune in every day. Is this relationship going to progress at all yet? You know, and they keep having obstacles thrown up, and you keep having to wait for this couple that you're rooting for. So I don't know where that is. I want that back. And I don't know why we don't have it anymore. And I'm like, women enjoy this. You know, we want romance. And I have to, you know, and not that romance is just for women or by women, but for a long time, you know, that's kind of where it's mostly women's stories being told by women. And so it's seen as less than. You know, people being happy, happy is a lesser emotion. It's not artistic. It's not tragedy. A middle-aged professor sleeping with his grad student while navel-gazing and pondering his life. That's art. But people falling in love, that's not art. You know, so I don't know why we as a society decided that. I wish we would change our mind, because it's love to me is like the reason we're here. It's like the highest, best thing that could happen to us. And why would you not want to portray that in all the great things about it? So,
Right.
I wish there was more of it. I don't know why there's not. And I know Hollywood likes to stick to what they think will work and what people will watch. And like, I will tell you, a show I'm watching right now is Fire Country. I don't know what network it's on, but I don't even know why I started watching it. And I got to tell you, most of it bores me. Most of it, I'm like, yeah, fire, explosions, whatever. But there is a couple that I am down for. It's the hero and the heroine, and it's been a long burn. And they finally just kissed in the last episode. It was after the Super Bowl. They had an episode after the Super Bowl. And they kissed, and they're like, we can't do that again. I'm like, yes, this is what I'm here for. To them to have scenes and have this sexual tension and this chemistry, I love it. So I'm hoping they keep this up. I'm hoping the show, because if they don't, if they just get them together, I'm probably going to be done, because I love the taking a long time and getting to know each other and letting there be, let the audience anticipate it, let them be cheering for it. So,
well, Mom and I have been watching Miss Scarlet and the Duke on PBS.
Love Scarlet and the Duke. Oh my
and
gosh.
And of course, that's another one. You know all along that they belong together.
Yes.
But
they have to fight it.
And
I even love that the Duke, that we can have, because it's historical, that he can be this very macho, masculine man.
Yeah.
You know, we don't always get that as much these days. And so I appreciate that aspect as well.
Yeah. Yep. So we just watched the episode where her nemesis, who he was seeing, ended it because she realized that he's actually in love with Miss Scarlet, but the two of them aren't going to admit it to each other yet.
Nope.
So
it's fun.
It is, but sometimes I get frustrated about, it's like, why can't people just be honest about their feelings? I know if they are, then you don't have much of a story, but at some point, isn't there a lesson here that honestly just be honest about how you're feeling, because what's the worst that can happen if the other person
the worst
doesn't
that can happen is they can say no, and it's but devastating.
But if you never say, you're never going to get the guy either. You know,
right?
Yeah,
and that's,
you're never find that one. Yeah, right. Right.
It's the push and pull in romance novels, and people say that, and it's very logical, but then we take it to our real lives, and how often have we done that in our real lives?
I know.
That we have stayed quiet because we're embarrassed and we're afraid of rejection, and I think it's very human and very honest to actually do that, and it's easy to step back and look at someone else and say, well, you should just tell him because your heart's not involved. You don't
have
a dog in that
fight.
So, but I think when it is you, I think it feels differently.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. It's been a while since I've been in that situation. So, you were talking about, you know, the build up to the first kiss. Now, in Chemistry of Love, that's as far as we really go, is the kissing. So is there a name for that kind of genre?
They call it sweet. They call it also clean and wholesome, but that really upsets other romance writers because they're like, well, so having sex is dirty. And I'm only using that as a category name that's on Amazon. It's not my description, I think sweet is probably what I use is where it's either closed door or completely off screen. And that's what I do.
And what about that appeals to you as opposed to the other?
There's a couple of things. When I get, you know, like a writing advice podcast and stuff, one of the questions I get asked a lot is, you know, should I be writing very spicy scenes because that's what people are looking for? And my advice is always, when you read, what do you enjoy? If you are like, yes, give me all the spicy scenes, I love these so much, these are the best part of the book, then yeah, that's how you should write. You should write very spicy books. You enjoy it. For me personally, what I was finding is that I would skip those scenes. You know, I would like, okay, yeah, this is going on. They've done that. Okay, let's get back to the actual romance part. So I found for me, what I personally enjoyed was more of the falling in love and the romance and the physicality, but without it being really explicit. And that was just a personal preference, you know? And then I kind of looked at the market as I was looking to publish, and you kind of have this spectrum of readers. Like, you have readers who read really sweet books, and then you have readers who read really spicy books. And there's like a big spectrum in between. And what I found was that readers who prefer sweet books are not going to read spicy books. They're just not.
Right.
It's just not what they want.
Yeah.
But spicy reader, there are spicy readers who will only read spicy. Like, that's the only thing they'll read. But there are a lot of spicy readers who are willing to go the opposite end of the spectrum. They're willing to read stuff that doesn't have it in there and still enjoy it. And I had the woman last night who told me at this book club, they're like, we typically read very spicy books. And she's like, and I didn't miss it in yours. Like, you still gave me what I look for, you know, in a book. And she's like, so, and I'm like, well, yay, that's what I'm trying to do. Yeah. So it was also a decision kind of, who can I appeal to? What's the broadest audience that, you know, could be out there, and what I prefer writing. So
how do you come up with new and creative ways to write about kissing?
It is the hardest thing in the world. So you have to be funny, and then you have to write kissing scenes that are not like every other kissing scene you've already written. I have friends who write spicier books, and they will actually just leave, like, you know, love scene here, and just like leave it in brackets and then come back to it, because it is hard. It's hard to describe it. An editor I work with now, a developmental editor, her job is to go in and kind of look for plot holes or things I left out, or, you know, just kind of help me shape the book before we start getting on the nitty gritty of like proofreading and stuff. And the first time I worked with her, one of my books, it was called, it was Moonstruck. And she's like, why are these people not having sex? Like, she kept leaving notes like that in the margin. And she's like, you describe this stuff the same way. And I'm like, yeah, because I'm not mentioning certain body parts when people are physically attracted to each other. So I'm limited in how I can describe, you know, the tingles and, you know, the molten sensation. Like, I'm not using, you know, certain things. And so she's like, you kind of keep mentioning this stuff. I'm like, well, yeah, because I have a very limited amount of descriptors that I can use and body parts that it's okay to kind of bring in to use for this. That's not kind of, you know, much spicier and in that aspect and more explicit. So yeah, it is really, really hard. It's not something, and it's one of those things where I'm like, I just want to be able to write and then they kissed, you know, and move on to the next thing. But my readers, this is like one of the things they tell me that they love about my books. And so it becomes this, again, making these readers happy and fulfilling that, you know, I want that too. Cause when I started writing, when I was making the decisions of what to write, I was reading a lot of kind of these sweet books. And I was disappointed that I felt like they weren't like even holding hands to the last page, let alone, you know, anything else. And I thought that's not true to my experience of falling in love, that there was very much a physical component to falling in love. And it was not in these books. And I'm like, so I'm going to write it where there is one. You know, and I started doing that. So, and there's a lot of books out there like that, especially now. But I felt like it was really missing from that market. And so I started writing it. And I mean, I have my line as an author, and it makes some readers uncomfortable, and it's too far for them, and that's fine. There's something for everyone out there, you know, but which I think is great. It's a very weird spot to be in, because I have readers who are like, you are so racy and, you know, explicit. And I'm like, oh no.
No.
And then I have readers who are like, oh my gosh, this is for teenagers. Where's the good stuff? You know, so it's in this very odd place to be where it's like, I'm too racy for these people, but I'm not racy enough over here. And
well, you can't please everyone. That's for sure.
You can't.
So you may as well please yourself.
That's exactly the point. I'm going to write the stuff that I would want to read.
Got that right. Yeah.
Well, thank you for being with us today, Soraya. We are just about out of time. And we always like to close with a quote from my mother. Do you have one for us today?
Well, I do. There is a song, Love is a Many Splendored Thing. And I think this book illustrates that completely.
Aw.
That's sweet. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And I'm watching for you on the big screen for your work on the big screen.
Yes.
Or the little screen. Either one. I'll take either one.
Me too. I'll take either one.
All right. Thanks so much, and see you all next week on Writer's Voices.
Bye-bye, everybody.